Okay, so the home I grew up in is down, it was Granger when I grew up down there. The home was over 100 years old when we lived in it. It actually had belonged to my dad's sister's husband, so my uncle. It belonged to his family. He'd grown up there. And it was a strange house. And it started off being like a kind of a one-room type house, and they kind of built off to the side when they added to it. Well, we had quite a few experiences there. Most of them we knew were my uncle's father and his mother. My brother and cousin had seen him walk in the front door and out the back door many times. My dad would get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, and he would see him in the home. We would hear music boxes, but we didn't have any music box in our house. If that makes any sense to you?
Yeah.
We had a room that we use as like a pantry to like hold food storage and that kind of stuff. That room was literally like 30 degrees colder than the rest of the house. My dad had brought people in. He'd had them look through the vents. There was no reason that room was like that, but that room was always at least 30 degrees cooler than any other part of the house. Didn't matter summer, winter, spring, fall, that room was freezing cold.
I've noticed a commonality in many of the paranormal enthusiasts I speak to for this show. Many of them began their interest in the paranormal very early because they experienced the paranormal very early. It's as if they grew up haunted. I'm Dory Peacock, and this is The Ghost Box.
Something would go missing in my room, and then it would turn up like in a place I know I didn't leave it. And in fact, I would do things like if something went missing, I'd say, okay, I'm going to leave the room. I need my item back. Please put it back where it belongs on, you know, and I'd come in and be on my dresser or whatever. So they would put it back. And those were the friendly spirits. I mean, I know those were my uncle's family.
This is Jody. You may remember Jody from our Lagoon episode. Jody grew up in an old house in Granger, Utah. The house was built by her relatives around the turn of the century, and as long as Jody could remember, it was a peculiar place to live.
Kind of a funny thing, my uncle's dad was known to be kind of a dirty old man, I guess you could say, and I was in the bathroom one time, I was home alone, and I was brushing my hair, I was probably about 15, 16 years old, and I actually got my butt pinched. Nobody else in the home. But my butt was definitely pinched. My mom and dad tried to tell me, oh, maybe your underwear snapped, maybe this, maybe that. I'm like, no. I knew exactly what was going on. We found a bunch of like pioneer artifacts when we went to dig up our garden. We found like old pioneer items that made us believe that it was probably a Mormon settlement at one point. You know, that they had actually camped there or started, you know, setting up some type of thing, you know, some type of settlement there at one point. Because of the things we found, like we found an oxen yoke, we found the glass rolling pins that they would fill as like beans and that to change the weight on them. We found a bunch of those items, and we actually ended up donating those to one of the Mormon museums up here in Salt Lake. Probably though, you know, those things never really bothered me, but there were two instances in the home that were not friendly spirits. When my sister was about 12 and she's 5.5 years older than me, my mom kept finding her asleep on the couch at night in the mornings. And she'd be like, why are you sleeping on the couch? And she'd say, because a man keeps coming in my room and he keeps trying to take me. And my mom said, okay, this is what I need you to do. I want you to put your Bible next to your bed. And next time he comes, I want you to say to him, are you Jesus and can I touch you? Well, my sister did that. The guy came, she asked him that, and he disappeared, and she never had any other experiences. My father passed away in 1992, and the way our home was set up, like I said, they started out as kind of like a one-room thing, and when they built on, they added off to the sides, kind of. So our living room was right in the middle. And then right off that was my parents' bedroom on the west side, and our bedroom was on the east side. Well, there was our bedroom, and then you went through another door that was connected to our bedroom. There was another little bedroom. And there was another little door where our furnace and our washer and dryer and that were. And my dad passed away in 92. I was 22 years old at the time. And I was working at Wendy's as a manager, and I'd come home very late. My mom was asleep on the couch. And I went in my room, and I was trying to be very quiet. Got ready for bed, got into bed. I was very exhausted. I'd been at work for 14 hours that day. And I laid in the bed, and I kept hearing growling. Now, I'm not talking like dog growling or animal growling. This was, I don't even know how to describe it. It was the most ungodly, evil growl I've ever heard. Just the sound, just even thinking about it now, just raises the hair on my arms and back and everything. When I kept hearing the growling, it started getting closer and closer, like it was coming from the bedroom that was off our bedroom, my bedroom at the time. And all of a sudden, I thought, I'm turning on the light. So I flipped on my side bed light, my little lamp, and I could literally, like you see in like the movies, like The Exorcist and those kind of movies, I could see my breath. That's how cold it had gotten in that room. Now, my parents kept the home cooler, and this was in February. This was about a week after my dad had passed, but not cool enough that you could see your breath. This was like I was outside in the cold. You could see my breath. The growling got worse and worse and worse. And I was so scared. Like, I could barely move. Like, I was frozen in my bed, but I knew I had to get out of that room. I knew something not good was coming into that room if I stayed there. So I grabbed my Bible, I grabbed my blanket, I grabbed my pillow, and I went and laid on the floor next to the couch. And we had accordion doors on the bedrooms, kind of like those bar doors, you know, that slide open. I slid that closed, and I even left the lamp on. That's how scared I was. I just left the lamp on that was in the bedroom. I was getting my stuff and getting out of there. I laid there, and that growling kept happening in that room. And then I could see the light turning on and off, on and off, on and off, on and off. Because it had slats in it. You could see the light turning on and off, on and off. And I just laid there, and I just prayed, and I read that Bible the entire night. I did not sleep. I just laid there. And it was probably about 4:30 in the morning. The growling finally quit. The light turned off, and that was it. I never had another experience like that, but I will always remember that feeling. It was the most nauseous feeling, and the smell of sulfur. It was, I can't even describe. To this day, I'm 51 years old. That happened when I was 22, and it still gives me nightmares because I know that was a demon. That was not a poltergeist. That was not a friendly spirit. That was a demon, and I don't know where it came from. I don't know if it was preying upon us because we just had the loss of my dad, but I will never, ever forget that feeling. It was like it came right out of a movie.
The haunted house is one of the most iconic objects in American paranormal lore. After all, that's what the first season of American Horror Story was about. But the haunted house doesn't always have to be malicious, dangerous, or scary. As I found out when I interviewed John Olson. John is a paranormal enthusiast and author. He just released the 5th installment in his Stranger Bridgerland series, called Beyond Stranger US. We'll have a link in the show notes to where you can find his book. John also grew up in an old house with lots of history, but his hauntings were a little more playful. I'll let him take it away.
Yeah, so, as I mentioned, I'm a paranormal author. I interview people about their firsthand accounts. And how I got started was I grew up in a home that was built in 1883 here in northern Utah. The house I grew up in my whole life, I lived in the house. And by the time I was 8 years old, right in the beginning of the 80s, I noticed that things happened in my house that didn't happen a lot in my friend's house. And my sister and I and my younger brother would talk about our experiences. And some of the first ones that I remember are fairly simple. there was footsteps on the staircase. There's a very steep staircase that goes from the main floor up to my bedroom where I stayed. And anytime during the day, you could hear heavy footsteps of a heavy boot going up and down, or even children's footsteps running up and down the stairs. And you would go look and there wouldn't be anybody on the stairs. And that would happen quite frequently. We coined the term the stair monster as kids, just because as kids, you like to kind of give names to, you know, things that are going on. So we called it the stair monster. And as I grew up, I had many different situations and experiences in the home. One of the things that would happen quite frequently is, for example, I was playing with a toy airplane in the kitchen or around the house, and it was just a small metal toy airplane. And as I'm flying it around the house, I was getting thirsty. So I went into the kitchen and I set the toy airplane on the table, and I turned around to the sink and I got a drink and took a drink. And when I turned back around, my airplane was missing, but in its place was an old cap gun, metal cap gun. And I picked it up and looked at it, and it was in pristine condition, but it was really heavy. And I took it to my mom and showed it to her and told her what happened. And she looked at it, and on the bottom, it was stamped. It was made in 1920s. And I looked all over for my airplane and couldn't find it. And so I played with the cap gun for a while. And oddly enough, for years, the cap gun would disappear again and other toys would appear. And this went on quite a bit when I was younger, where just right out from underneath your nose, a toy would disappear and another toy would appear in its place, an older toy. That was, I found really fascinating, especially as a kid, that things would go missing. One morning along those lines, it was Saturday morning, and me and my little brother went down to the basement to watch Saturday morning cartoons with our bowl of cereal. And my dad had just received a pair of hunting boots in the mail, and he was excited to get them ready. So he was upstairs in the kitchen, and he put the boots down and turned around to get scissors to cut the ties around the laces so he could lace his boots. And when he turned around, the laces were gone. They weren't sitting on the counter anymore. And he yelled down the stairs for me and my brother to bring his shoelaces back. And we looked at each other because we hadn't left the basement and nobody else was home at the time. And my dad looked all over the kitchen, under the table, everywhere, no shoelaces. He yelled at us again. We called up and said we'd never left the basement. About half an hour later, he gave up and went outside to start some work, and sitting on the table outside on the front porch where he hadn't been and we hadn't been all morning was the shoelaces, and they'd been cut, the bands around them, and laid out nicely on the table out front. And that was some of the more benign things that happened when I was growing up in the house. Because there were so many things going on, I was never really frightened. None of us were really frightened of what was going on, but more intrigued about the strange goings on. And having grown up in a small town in northern Utah, my parents didn't let us share our experiences when we were younger. They were really afraid people would think that we were kind of crazy or something was wrong with us. So we kind of had to keep it to ourselves. For a long time, there were different things that went on where it seemed to be a trickster spirit, you know, with things going missing, things reappearing, a strange whistle that would go on in the front room. Or one big thing that happened quite a bit to me is I would be somewhere in the front room or upstairs in my bedroom, and my mother, I'd hear my mother call to me from the kitchen to come down. And so I would go into the kitchen expecting to find my mom, but there wouldn't be anybody there. And so I would go looking and find my mom and ask her what she wanted, and she'd say she hadn't called me. And this happened quite a bit growing up as well. And it also happened to my siblings. The more recent one of those, about 2 years ago, my parents still live in the house that I grew up in. and I stopped by to visit them before picking up my youngest son from school, and they were gone. So I just went in and sat in the front room reading a book. And before long, I heard the back door open and close, and I heard my dad call out saying, we're home. And so I got up and walked into the kitchen, and nobody was there. And I looked out the window, and their car still wasn't there. So I went back into the front room and down and started reading again. And again, I get the sound of the door opening and closing and my dad calling out that he was home. And so I got up again and went into the kitchen. And once again, nobody's there. And I look out the window and their car isn't there yet. And this time from behind me in the corner of the kitchen, I get the sound of a laugh. Just a mischievous laugh. And having gone through so much in the house, like I said, it doesn't really frighten me. So I just kind of said, oh, you got me again, and went back into the front room. And it went a little while longer, and I heard the door open again, my dad call out, and I just stayed in the front room. I wasn't going to fall for it this time. And before long, my dad did walk in and ask me why I hadn't come in when he called, and I kind of laughed and explained that the ghost have been playing tricks on me.
Did you ever see a ghost in your parents' house?
Yes. So the first time I remember seeing him, I had come home from school. I was in eighth grade at the time. And I came home from school and nobody was home. So I made myself a sandwich in the kitchen and went into the front room and sat down on the couch. And I was just about ready to turn the TV on when I caught some movement out of the corner of my eye, and I looked, and in the main doorway to the front room, there was a gentleman standing there, and I couldn't see his facial features, and I could see through him, but I could see that he was tall. He had on a white shirt and overalls and a wide brimmed hat, like a straw hat. And I looked, and he walked in to the front room and sat in a rocking chair that was directly across from me and started rocking back and forth. And I closed my eyes, I remember, and I counted to 10, and I opened my eyes and he was gone, but the rocking chair was still rocking. So I jumped up and ran out to the front porch and waited for my mom to get home. She was running errands, and told her. That was the first time I saw what I ended up calling the man in the hat. But I wasn't the only one that had seen him. My mother had also seen him several times. On one occasion, I remember when I was little, I came home from school, and the main bathroom in the house had an entry from the main part of the house, and then also an entry from my parents' bedroom. And my dad was taking the door off and walling up the door on my parents' side of the bathroom that went into their bedroom. And I'm asking why they were doing that, and them giving me kind of a curt answer about this is the way they wanted it. But later on, I would find out from my mother, it was because she would wake up at night and the man in the hat would be standing in the doorway of the bathroom watching them sleep. And in her mind, if they got rid of that, he would stop doing it. And he did end up, you know, they didn't see him again in that particular area. But my mother did tell me on many occasions she would be working in the bedroom and someone would walk in and she would assume it was my dad and start talking to him. And when he didn't answer, she would turn and he would disappear. And it was, again, the man in the straw hat. Later on, my grandparents, and one thing about the house is it was originally built by the railroad and then sold off in the 1890s. And then later on, my ancestors purchased the house in around 1910, 1920. And my family has owned the house since then. When my grandmother, who just lived a block away from me, passed away and we were helping pack up their house, which was also an old house that had gone through the generations, I found an old photo album that I started going through, and I turned one of the pages and about fell out of my chair because there was an old photo of my house with a gentleman standing in front of it, and he had a wide-brimmed hat, tall, skinny man with a white shirt and overalls, and it was him. And so I was able to find out that that was a great, great uncle that had owned the house in the 20s. So there is a connection there with what we've seen and family members that used to live there.
Was he the only entity that you knew of in the house?
I believe there's more than one in there. There seems to be, well, and the reason is that I believe that is on several occasions, I woke up as a teenager and there were two individuals, a man and a woman, having a conversation in my room. And I usually would have to say, hey, I've got school in the morning. I got to get to bed. You got to stop. And they would eventually stop. But there was always a man and a woman's voice. And so I believe there's more than one there. There's one, whether it's the man in the hat or another spirit, it seems to be very, it loves to play pranks on people. It's very much a prankster. Not too long ago, my dad had knee replacement surgery and he had to sleep in the front room. And when he had to sleep in the front room, there was many a times he said that he would just be almost asleep and someone would cattle whistle. That's with the two fingers in your mouth, whistle really loud right in his ear. And he would jump and he would hear laughter and somebody run off almost like a younger person that would do that. So I think there's definitely at least two or three people, ghosts that are in the house for sure.
I have a rare privilege this episode of ending with a couple of stories that are more positive, more touching and spiritual than spooky and mysterious.
So weird. What would you say has been sort of your most memorable experience with spirits?
So my daughter, she's 8 years old now, but she... from the time she was little, she would always jibber jabber talk to somebody. And, you know, they talk about kids having imaginary friends. Well, when she was probably about 18 months old, so, she, you know, she was kind of like mama, dad, you know, the start, you know, of holding conversations, you know, and that. We had actually, my brother-in-law was watching her, and we'd come home, and he says, gosh, she keeps staring at something and laughing and talking and everything like that. He goes, it creeps me out. And I'd seen it too. And so I said, Hodger, I said, who's your friend? Who's the friend you're talking to? Who's that friend you're talking to? She looks at me and she goes, Bucky. I was stunned. And the reason why is my dad, his name was Bill, but he had buck teeth his entire life growing up. So he was always called Buck. Everybody who knew him called him Buck. They never called him Bill. There's no way my daughter could have known that because she was 18 months old. My dad died in 1992 and she wasn't born until 2013. Probably about a year ago, we were in the car and it was around the time that my dad had passed away. And from the back of the car, my daughter goes, Mom. I said, what, hon? And she knew I was kind of, you know, having a sad day. And she goes, Bucky's here. And he told me to tell you that he loves you. So no doubt in my mind, that's who her friend was my dad. I'd had experience probably about right after that demon experience. My dad had probably been gone about a week and a half. And my mom was really worried. There was no life insurance. And, you know, burying people is very, very expensive. And she, was just very concerned. And I was asleep one night and I thought it was a dream, but I remember in my dream, I woke up and I was sitting up on my bed and my dad was in the room and there was this glow around him. And he sat on the edge of my bed and he said, I want you to tell your mom that everything's going to be okay. And he says, and I know I didn't say this much when I was alive. He was not a very affectionate man, but we knew he loved us. I mean, he just was not a very, you know, huggy kind of parent, but that was him. And he says, but I do love you. And then he gave me a hug and then he disappeared and I laid down and went back to sleep. Well, this was in my dream. I thought it was a dream.
When I was much younger, and my oldest son was just a baby. My grandmother, who lived in Denmark, my mother is from Denmark, she passed away, and because of finances and everything, my mother and dad were the only ones that could go to the funeral. And so it was kind of disconcerting to not be able to say goodbye, but, you know, life goes on and everything, you know, just keeps going. And at the time, I lived in a little house in Nibley, Utah. And my wife at the time, she was a beautician. And so Saturday mornings, she would always leave in the summertime. She would leave really early in the morning to go do wedding updos. That was that was her big thing on Saturday mornings. So she had gotten up and left. And my son, who was on the other side of the house, was still asleep in his crib. And I was laying in bed in between sleep. I wasn't really asleep. I wasn't really awake. And all of a sudden, there was a knock at my door. And I said, come in. And my grandma came in. And she walked across and sat on the end of the bed, on the edge of the bed, and had a conversation with me about how my mom was doing, how was the family, how was my son, you know. And all of a sudden, I looked at her and I said, you know, I said, Grandma, you know, you passed away 6 months ago. And she got a big smile on her face and she looked at me and she said, that doesn't mean I can't come visit you from time to time. And I said, well, that's nice. And she got up and walked out of my bedroom and shut the door. And about that time, I came to full consciousness. I don't want to say I was asleep. But I looked down and there was still an indent on my bed from where she had been sitting. So, you know, a lot of people have said when I share that story, there's a lot of skeptics that will be like, oh, well, you were asleep and subconsciously you wanted to say goodbye to your grandma. And I can understand their feelings on that. But I can tell you honestly and in my heart, I know that my grandmother came to see me and kind of say goodbye. And it was a very special and poignant point in my life that helped me a lot with saying goodbye and realizing that, you know, the paranormal is not just scary. Sometimes it's very helpful. And it's nice to be able to interview people who have also had experiences where the ghosts ended up being helpful in situations and not necessarily scary.
Yeah, I find that like a lot of people who have sort of paranormal encounters throughout their lives, it starts with something kind of nice like that, a visit from a relative or a kind spirit.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a lot of stories out there like that. And again, I've interviewed a lot of people who have had good experiences like that in their life. My great-grandmother, who I a couple of years ago was able to get a hold of her personal journal, had stories like that galore in hers about getting help from the other side, I guess you could say. And so it's just fascinating to me that it can be both, you know, a frightening experience and kind of an uplifting experience at the same time, or not necessarily at the same time, but they can both happen.
Are there any stories of hers that you find particularly memorable?
There was one, yes, the one that stands out, when she was much older, one of my uncles, this is my great grandmother, and one of my uncles, as a baby, was very sick, and nobody could figure out what was wrong with him, and he had a deep croup cough, and they were really worried about him as a baby that the doctors couldn't figure out, the local doctors, whatever, couldn't figure out why he had this cough, and he had trouble sleeping at night, and it was just, he was losing a lot of weight. And my grandmother went to church to pray about it. And she was there praying and trying to figure out, you know, trying to get some help. And she wrote in her diary that all of a sudden there was a woman that was sitting next to her, and the woman was all in white. And she asked my grandma didn't recognize her from anybody. She spent a lot of time going to church and everything, did not recognize the woman at all. And the woman asked her if she had a pencil. And she said, yeah, I do. And she goes, do you have a pencil and paper? And so my grandma pulled those things out and she says, I want you to write these things down. And she wrote down these ingredients. And she said, now take those things and make a mustard plast out of it and put it on the wrap and put it on the baby's chest so that he can breathe it in and let him wear it, you know, for so many hours and through the night, and then replace it the next day. And so my grandmother's writing this down, and she hadn't even said anything to anybody about why she was there to pray or anything like that. And when she looked up, the woman was gone. So she immediately went and had somebody take her to the store, and she bought all of these things that were on the list, and she made what's kind of called mustard plast, which is just various ingredients and ointments and whatever, and went in and put it on my uncle as a baby. And within the next day, after sleeping with it and having it that day, his cough was all but gone. And within 2 days, he was completely all better. And so that story really hit home and was kind of amazing from a kind of a religious standpoint, I guess, that her pouring her heart out was, and she lived such a devoted life that she was blessed like that to be able to help my uncle.
Thank you for listening. The Ghost Box is written, produced, hosted, and all the things by me, Dory Peacock, with mixing, mastering, scoring, and all the stuff by Parker Abegg. Parker B. Abegg. Gotta get that B in there. With special help from our four-legged fuzzy production assistant, George Moosington Adams Esquire, because of course my cat is a lawyer. I want to thank Jody and John for sharing their stories with us for this episode. And once again, we will have a link in the show notes to where you can find John's book, Beyond Stranger US. If you're interested in John's work, you can visit strangerbridgerland.com or follow him on Instagram at @stranger_Bridgerland. That info will also be in the show notes. I want to thank all of our Patreon patrons for supporting the show. Patreon is a nifty website where you can give small monthly donations to help support independent creators like me, and in return, you get some snazzy bonus content. We have a couple of bonus episodes up on Patreon now, and we'll hopefully be doing an upcoming Ask Me Anything on Twitch, so stay tuned for that, patrons. So, if you would like to toss a coin in the box, as they say, go to patreon.com/theghostbox and choose the monthly donation level that suits your needs. Finally, if you like the show, please rate and review on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. It helps people find the show. And if you didn't like the show, then maybe those noises from the attic will get louder and louder and louder. Thanks again for listening. Stay spooky, everybody. Oh, moosey cat. Where are you? Moose. Moose. Beep, beep.